Street scene, summer, the present. Man on a sidewalk named Lou Bookman, age 60-ish. Occupation, pitchman. Lou Bookman, a fixture of the summer, a rather minor component to a hot July, a nondescript, commonplace little man whose life is a treadmill built out of sidewalks. And in just a moment, Lou Bookman will have to concern himself with survival, because as of 3 o'clock this hot July afternoon, he'll be stalked by Mr. Death. Yes, this is the second episode of The Twilight Zone, season one. So right when the show is getting started, this was the story. And it's an episode called One for the Angels. Maybe not the best Twilight Zone episode, but very memorable. It's very well done. And in this episode, I remember watching it and just thinking to myself, one day this is going to be an homily, and today is that day. I'm so excited. The story goes, Lou Bookman, as was mentioned in the introductory part of the episode, he's a pitchman, which is a man that sells these knickknacks and trinkets on the side of the road. So he walks around with this big old suitcase that he carries around, and he opens it up, and he just sells these items to whoever may be passing by on the streets of New York. Now, Lou Bookman is not a very good pitchman. He doesn't sell a whole lot of his wares, mainly because what he really enjoys doing is playing with the kids on the street, that they are on summer break, and they'll bring him their broken-down toys. And he's a handyman. He loves to take those toys and fix them up, give them back to the kids, and just see the smiles on their faces. He just enjoys that so very much. Now, on this particular day, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, he's approached by this pale man in a very smart black suit. And the man comes up to him, and he says, "Lou Bookman?" He says, "Yes." "I'm showing here that I have an appointment with you tonight at midnight. Please do not be late." And Lou Bookman's like, "What are you talking about? I have no clue who you are. I don't know of any appointment that I have tonight at midnight. What's going on here?" And the man apologizes. He's like, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I forgot to introduce myself. My name is Mr. Death. And tonight at midnight, I have an appointment to collect you, as you will be dying of natural causes on the stroke of midnight." Lou Bookman didn't take him seriously at first. He's just like, "Oh, you're just kidding me. You know, there's no way you're really Mr. Death. Like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, you got to prove yourself to me." And Mr. Death was just like, "Well, you can believe me or not. I really don't care. But tonight at midnight, I will be there by your side to escort you from this life to the next." Well, now Lou is getting a little disturbed by this, and he starts trying to make deals with Mr. Death. And he's just like, "Well, what can I do? Can I do you any favors? Can I give you some of the stuff in my suitcase? Like, what will it take to get you to cancel this appointment tonight? I mean, I'm only in my 60s. I thought I had years, decades left of my life. How can you just approach me today and take that all away from me?" And Mr. Death was unsympathetic, and he said, this is the way this works. This is the rules. This is your appointed time." And finally, Lou Bookman, he kind of broke down. He's just like, "Well, that's a shame, because I had this dream that I wanted to do something with my life. There was something specific that I wanted to do that now I'm never going to get the chance to see fulfilled." Well, this Mr. Death, he kind of rolls his eyes, and he's like, "Well, you know, we do make exceptions from time to down for dreams. That if you have a dream that hasn't been fulfilled, we may give you an extension so you have the chance to at least fulfill that dream." Well, Lou Bookman's like, "All right, here we go. You know, we got something to work with here." And so he plays on that. He's just like, "Well, my dream as a pitchman, as someone that sells these wares, I've always dreamed of having the perfect day. I've always dreamed of having that day where I'm just on a roll, where everybody who comes by, I'm able to sell them what I have, that I sell everything in my suitcase. There's a crowd gathered around that wants to hear what I have to say about these items. And I would call that day One for the Angels, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity." And Mr. Death, listening to this, is like, okay, I think we can work with that. Let's make a deal. Let's shake on it that we'll give you an extension until you have that perfect day, one for the angels. And then it'll be your time to go. Your life will have been fulfilled. So they shake on it, you know, and Lou Bookman, he gets this smile on his face, and he's just like, well, you know, I think today's the day I'm going to retire. He's like, I don't think I'm ever going to sell anything ever again. He's kind of like, I got you, Mr. Death, you know, you made a deal. And Mr. Death agreed. And he said, you're right. You got me. I made a deal, and I'll hold to it that I won't collect you until you've had that day. You're basically immortal at this point. But the appointment for midnight is still on. Someone will be there, even if it's not you. And at that moment, a car screeches on the road, and it hits this little girl, Maggie, who many times had gone to Lou with her broken toys and asked for his advice. And the family comes rushing out of the house, and they pick her up off the street. They rush her into the apartment. They call the doctor up there, and she's in a coma. It doesn't look good for Maggie. And Lou realizes immediately what has happened, that she is now taking his place. And so he begs Mr. Death. He's like, take me instead. I didn't know this was going to happen. I don't want Maggie to die on my behalf. Take me. I've lived my life. And Mr. Death says, no, Mr. Bookman. We made a deal and we shook on it. You cannot be taken until you have your dream fulfilled. So right then and there, Mr. Bookman sets up shop right there on the sidewalk. He opens up his suitcase and he starts selling like he's never sold before. Anyone who passes by, he's selling knickknacks and trinkets. He's building them up, pitching them as the most luxurious items the world has ever seen. These wristwatches are the best wristwatches the world has ever known. And a crowd starts to gather around him. And even Mr. Death himself is intrigued. And he starts kind of, you know, peering over and looking into the suitcase. What does this man have? Why is this stuff so good? And he starts buying these neckties and wristwatches and all this random junk that Mr. Bookman has. And he's on a roll, and it's one for the ages, one for the angels. And Mr. Death is so caught up in this that he misses his appointment. Midnight comes and goes, and Mr. Death is still on the sidewalk. And he looks at Mr. Bookman and he says, that's the second time today that you've gotten me. But it looks like you've had your perfect day. It looks like you've had one for the angels. Mr. Bookman agreed. He said, yes, I think I have. I think I finally have had one for the angels. Death comes for every man. It's a fact. It's a reality. It's something that we all know, but yet we hate thinking about it. Even like Lou, he thought he had years, decades left. He wasn't ready to die. None of us are. And so we don't talk about it. We don't think about it. We don't even want to bear it in mind. If you read the readings for today, that's what they're about. First reading is vanity of vanities. All the world is vanities. This life, everything in it is vanity. Why? Because it's not going to last. It will eventually fade away. Second reading, it says that we should die to all things in this world, licentiousness, greed, lying. These sinful things of this world, we're meant to die to them. And then in the gospel, Christ teaches that to be a rich man that focuses on this world and accumulating wealth and the things of this world, it doesn't matter. Why? Because you're going to die someday. Years from now, today, who knows? Now, for a long time in human history, this was just a known fact, and we lived it out. Like, it was a philosophy of life. It was called memento mori. Can you say that with me now? Memento mori. Oh, we can do better than that. Memento mori. All right, memento mori literally means remember death. And the idea behind memento mori is that we don't just shunt this off and not think about it, but instead we embrace the reality of death. Now, at first glance, that seems very contradictory to us. Like, why should we do that? We should live life to the full. But back then, that was normal. People would hang up paintings in their house that have images of death. There would be clocks in the public square, you know, like steeples. And on the clock would be a word, a Latin phrase, ultima forsen, which is Latin for perhaps the last hour. Meaning that as you look upon that clock, this may be your last hour that you're looking upon. And for most of human history, this was normal for us to think this way. Why? Because we knew that this world was not our home, that it was vanity of vanities, that death was our ultimate end. Now, this wasn't meant to be morbid. This wasn't meant to be sad. It was meant to be a reminder so we could do something different with our life. Even me, at my house, I have this little guy that I have on my desk at my house. So this nice little skull here. His name is Brooke. I love Brooke. He just sits there, and it's kind of that mentality of memento mori. But there's a second reason I have Brooke on my desk. And it's because he is the perfect size for my gaming headset to fit upon. So it works out really well. So Brooke here, it's the same thing. Memento mori, remember death. Now, why? Why remember death? Why these readings today? Why would Christ give us such a horrible message reminding us that you're going to die? Everything that's life then, well, it doesn't matter, right? Well, no. Things in this life don't matter when we don't think about death. Because what happens? Suddenly, if we don't think about death, we don't think about our end cause, then every day just kind of fades into every other day. We wake up, we live out that day, and then we just repeat it again and again and again, and it just seems that it's going to go on forever this way. And we just kind of, I don't know, it becomes dull. It just becomes this silly game, and we find that the things that we invest ourselves in, they either are unimpressive, they don't fulfill us, or even worse, they make us anxious and worried about life, these things that we're dealing with. And so what does thinking about death do for us? Well, suddenly, we're free. If you recognize that one day we're going to die, right, and we're going to move on to a much better life, just imagine that. When you're there in paradise and you're looking back on the few years that we have on this globe, suddenly we're going to think to ourselves, why? Why was I so worried? When we're there in paradise and in the complete joy of heaven, we're going to look back and say, it was stupid of me to lend my thoughts and my emotions to these petty things that ultimately just fogged my vision. It frees us from that. So that even in the moment we can say, you know what? This thing isn't that big of a deal. In the grand scheme of things, it's not going to matter. And that's so freeing for us. We can finally give ourselves over to God. And that's what the second thing is that thinking about death does for us. If we recognize that we could die at any moment, quite literally, and we embrace that, we accept that, then suddenly every day becomes a gift. And I'm not doing the whole carpe diem thing where it seize the day and make the most of the day. Instead, I'm saying it means that every day we realize that we have yet another opportunity, another chance to choose God. If the angels could be jealous of us, this would be one of the things they were jealous of us for. Why? Because the angels are different from us. When they were first created, they had one and only one choice. They either chose God or they chose themselves and became demons. And then that was it for all eternity. There was no going back. There were no second chances. But for us, every moment we're alive, every dawn that we see, we have yet another chance to choose God. Now, we make mistakes. We choose ourselves. We choose the world. We choose the vanity of vanities day in and day out. But that's okay. Why? Because we have now. The fact that we will someday die reminds us that we have now to choose God, a choice that will have ramifications for all eternity. This is why the Catholic Church is so pro-life. This is why that we're so opposed to abortion and euthanasia and, yes, capital punishment, which has been brought back to this nation, reinstituted. Because we believe that every person should have every opportunity to make that change. That we are not God. We should not be the ones making this decision when this moment happens. Only God and God alone knows how much time we need to choose Him and turn away from the world and its vanities. We don't know that. And so for us to give in to these policies, especially here in Terre Haute, it's a problem. To say to somebody, we don't know when death's going to come for you, instead to say to them, we have a date. There is a deadline on this day will be the end. We are taking God's role into our hands and denying this person that gift of another day. This is even true for the shootings that we heard about this weekend, that when we have someone that goes on a rampage like that, it's the same thing. You're acting as God. You're taking that into your own hands, and you're denying somebody this gift. But even this, at the end of the day, in the grand scheme of things, it's going to be made right by God, because we will all die. That's not a bad thing. At the end of the Twilight Zone episode, Lou Bookman, he looks at Mr. Death, and he says, I'm ready to go. I've lived my life well. I've given my life for this little girl to live. And who knows, maybe they need these little trinkets and neckties up in heaven. And then he pauses, and he looks at Mr. Death, and he's like, I am going to heaven, right? And Mr. Death nods his head. He says, yes, Mr. Bookman, you've made it. Louis J. Bookman, age 60-ish, occupation pitchman, formerly a fixture of the summer, formerly a rather minor component to a hot July, but throughout his life a man beloved by the children and therefore a most important man. Couldn't happen, you say. Probably not in most places, but it did happen in the Twilight Zone.